Piper Jet has taxied under its own power. Boeing risks another Dreamliner delay. And DOT takes a second look at the FAA certification of the Eclipse 500. This is Aero News. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for downloading this AeroCast. Here's what's up in aviation for Wednesday, July 2, 2008. Hot on the heels of news that Cirrus is now ground testing its single-engine very light jet, comes word that the Piper Jet proof of concept was fired up and tested on June 19th. Piper officials tell ANN that thanks to the Williams FJ44-3A engine mounted high in the vertical tail, the unique look of the Piper Jet POC now comes with a sound like no other Piper built before. The company says the first engine start and following operational tests were flawless, and then the Piper Jet moved forward under its own power for the first time. Piper test pilots began their evaluations with low-speed taxi tests to verify nose-wheel controllability and authority. The next major milestone in the countdown to first flight is high-speed taxi testing, when test pilots will accelerate to speeds just below liftoff to check for basic runway handling characteristics and elevator control authority. After that, it's on to the excitement of the first flight. So, which one will fly first, Cirrus or Piper? I'd have to guess both companies hope it happens before AirVenture opens on the 28th. Just when it looked as if Boeing had picked target dates it could actually hit, the plane maker said Monday the fourth 787 test aircraft may be delayed by damage to one of its carbon composite fuselage barrel sections. The damage to the Section 44 mid-body barrel was discovered at Global Aeronautica, a joint venture between Boeing and Alenia North America, located in Charleston, South Carolina. Boeing spokeswoman Yvonne Leach told the Seattle Times the damage was caused, quote, by an Alenia employee not following proper work procedures. We resolved it, but we have to look at the schedule and what that means. When we get the section, we'll know better about the overall impact, unquote. The mistake apparently involved a worker who installed fasteners too big for their holes, splintering the surrounding carbon fiber. It's thought repairs and testing could add weeks to the completion of Dreamliner No. 4, which is needed for the certification program. Somebody in Charleston's in line for a really ugly performance review. The U.S. Department of Transportation is riding its FAA division pretty hard these days. The DOT's Inspector General has recently issued reports highly critical of the FAA's handling of airline maintenance enforcement and labor relations with its own employees. Now, USA Today cites Jim Berard, a spokesman for the House Transportation Committee in Congress, in reporting another investigation underway by the IG. This one reportedly involves allegations that the FAA's certification of the Eclipse 500 very light jet in 2006 came despite safety concerns raised by the engineers and test pilots who evaluated the plane. The allegations are not new. The National Air Traffic Controllers Association, which also represents FAA aircraft certification workers, filed a grievance in October of 2006, alleging several outstanding safety and regulatory issues with the 500. The grievance didn't mention specific issues with the plane and was denied by the FAA, which stands by its certification. Eclipse CEO Vern Rayburn says the 500 is in complete and total conformity with federal regulations. He dismisses the complaint as an internal FAA matter. The House Transportation Committee reportedly expects to hear back from the DOT's Inspector General in a few weeks. NATCA says it expects to take its grievance to arbitration. Officials are working to determine why an all-Nippon Airways Boeing 777-300ER, bound for Japan, was forced to make a single-engine return approach to Chicago's O'Hare International Airport Monday morning. Area residents are expressing concern about the environmental impact of the fuel the heavy airliner was forced to dump over Lake Michigan. Initial reports said the airliner may have suffered a bird strike on climbout, but FAA spokeswoman Elizabeth Isham Corey told the Chicago Tribune the engine became inoperable due to unspecified metal fatigue. The exact cause remains undetermined. The crew dumped about 1,450 gallons, or about 4% of its fuel load, over Lake Michigan. That was the nearest unpopulated area available near Chicago, and that caused some concern from Chicago residents. Officials said only about 2% of the fuel probably reached the lake because it was dumped above 5,000 feet, allowing much of it to evaporate on the way down. That leaves about 32 gallons, all of it in small droplets, which will likely be broken down within a week by the combination of sunlight, wind, and hydrocarbon-eating bacteria in the lake. April Markowitz, who's the Associate Director of the Institute of Environmental Toxicology at Western Washington University, told the Tribune those bacteria usually feed on naturally occurring hydrocarbons, such as those found in discarded wood. City officials will monitor the lake to make sure none of the fuel makes it into the city's water supply. Up next on ANN, the U.S. and the EU agree to streamline aviation safety systems. Mesa Air Group reports good and bad financial news 6 weeks late. And Northrop Grumman plunges ahead with the KC-45A. You're listening to Aero News.
At Cirrus Design, we don't ignore the fundamentals of aviation design. We just give them an ingenious new interpretation. For 3 years running, the Cirrus SR-22 G2 has been the world's best-selling single-engine four-seat airplane. Today, the SR-22 G2 defines the new Cirrus standard model. Why? We'd love to invite you to see for yourself by taking a ride in the new breed of airplane that has taken the aviation industry by storm. To learn more, call 888-750-9927 or on the web at cirrusdesign.com. Finally, aviation headsets have evolved. Clarity Aloft is the next generation of headset design for a number of reasons. For instance, the noise-canceling microphone used in the Clarity Aloft headset is a high-fidelity, noise-canceling electret condenser microphone with performance optimized for speech frequencies in extremely high-noise environments. Stage performers and musicians use this same microphone because they must insist on the highest level of sound reproduction. For more information, call 612-747-3197 or check out the innovative Clarity Aloft headset on the web at clarityaloft.com.
We're back with more of your Aero Briefing for July 2nd, 2008. I'm Paul Plack. On Monday, the European Community and the United States signed an agreement intended to result in better harmonized aviation safety systems and less cumbersome technical and administrative procedures for the recognition of certificates. Both sides say this will further improve safety levels and reduce costs for manufacturers. The agreement specifically provides for joint participation in the inspection of civil aviation authorities and undertakings, for cooperation and assistance in any investigation or enforcement proceeding, and on the exchange of safety data. The EU and the US already have among the best aviation safety records in the world, with fewer than 0.6 accidents per million departures between 1996 and 2005. Mesa Air Group Incorporated this week reported a fiscal second quarter profit of $9.4 million, even after adjusting its earnings to reflect a settlement with Hawaiian Airlines over allegations of unfair competitive tactics. The Honolulu Star Bulletin reports, however, that Mesa's Go Airlines subsidiary, which operates inter-island flights in Hawaii, saw a net operating loss of $8.3 million, bringing total losses since its launch in June 2006 to $34.7 million. Mesa is based in Phoenix and was 6 weeks late in filing its report on Monday. That tardiness, combined with a string of bad news that's pushed the share price below a dollar, threatens to get the company's stock delisted by NASDAQ. Despite the challenges, which include the same rising fuel costs afflicting all carriers, Mesa Chairman and CEO Jonathan Ornstein told analysts and investors in a conference call that the demise of competitor Aloha Airlines has allowed Go to raise its base fares from $39 to $64 in just a year, with no significant decrease in traffic. Quote, "The additional capacity has helped us spread our costs. We've seen improvement in the operating environment in terms of load factors and fares. The numbers are such that in a normalized environment, we'd be feeling pretty good right now," unquote. Given the improving outlook for Go, it's possible the subsidiary could actually become a bright point on the balance sheet by next year. Ornstein said Go is courting a U.S. mail contract and has increased its wholesale business with tour operators. Mesa, meanwhile, the mother company, has settled a lawsuit from Hawaiian Airlines for $52.5 million, has seen its cash position deteriorate due in part to high fuel costs, and still faces a lawsuit from Aloha over predatory pricing and misuse of confidential information. Mesa dodged losing its Delta Connection business only by getting a preliminary injunction against Delta. Ornstein predicts an amicable solution is coming. Monday saw the end of Mesa's fiscal third quarter, which included improvement in the performance of its Go subsidiary. Will we have to wait another 12 weeks to know if the company has turned things around? Investors and NASDAQ all want to know. Ornstein says Mesa's financial results for the just concluded quarter will be filed in a timely manner. While everybody involved waits to hear from the U.S. Air Force on Boeing's partially successful challenge of an aerial tanker contract awarded to Northrop Grumman, Northrop continues to tout progress with its development of the KC-45A it expects to deliver under that contract. Northrop says the advanced fly-by-wire aerial refueling boom designed for that aircraft completed its 100th test flight in June. The company says its advanced refueling boom system has now accumulated over 300 flight hours, including over 60 separate wet and dry contacts with an F-16 receiver aircraft. The boom also successfully completed flight envelope expansion testing, validating its fly-by-wire control laws. EADS testers also executed proximity, pre-contact, and contact flight trials with five different aircraft, the F-16, F-1, FA-18, C-101, and the A330-based Royal Australian Air Force Multirole Tanker Transport, which shares significant commonality with the KC-45A. The new boom system already is integrated into the first Australian version of the plane, which is scheduled for delivery by EADS in 2009, and will soon enter the second phase of its flight testing and validation. The U.S. Air Force's selection of Northrop Grumman's plane was the fifth straight win for the tanker, which is based on the Airbus A330. It was already chosen by the Air Forces of Australia, United Kingdom, Saudi Arabia, and the United Arab Emirates. The DOT ruled Monday Virgin America Airlines must disclose financial and traffic data. The company had fought to keep those numbers confidential, arguing the new airline's competition would benefit. The department regularly releases financial and traffic data about all major U.S. airlines. Virgin America had hoped to avoid participating due to its affiliation with foreign interests. The Virgin Group, led by Sir Richard Branson, owns a 25% stake in the branded carrier. DOT did grant Virgin America's request to keep some data confidential. The agency will not publish figures on aircraft costs or asset depreciation. Still ahead, Jeppesen is off the hook for Flight 5191. Alaska Airlines is saving fuel and carbon while planes sit on the ground. And Ted Christie is the new CFO at Frontier Airlines. You're listening to Aero News.
Remember what the future used to look like? The flying cars, the spaceports, the rocket packs and spandex outfits. That was some future, wasn't it? But hey, here's the real future. A Garmin Wass Navigator. It makes its own glide path out of GPS signals, so you can land IFR at thousands of airports with no ILS or other ground-based approach aids. Now that's a future you can believe in. Garmin Wass GPS. Follow the leader.
Uncramp your style in a new Citation CJ2 Plus from Cessna. Now with integrated ProLine 21 avionics, FADEC, and a restyled cockpit and cabin. In the CJ2 Plus, you'll carry more payload than you could in the original CJ2. You'll climb and cruise faster. You'll have the freedom to use even shorter runways. And you'll do it all on less fuel. For a sure thing, call 1-800-4-CESSNA.
We're back to wrap up your Aero Briefing for Wednesday, July 2, 2008. I'm Paul Platt. The lawsuits that resulted from the crash of Comair Flight 5191 are gradually being resolved. Of the 47 suits filed on behalf of deceased passengers, 16 have been settled to date. Now, a suit which blamed Boeing subsidiary Jeppesen Sanderson for providing charts lacking detail on airport construction has been set aside by a federal judge. Flight 5191 was the regional jet which took off from the wrong runway at Lexington Bluegrass Airport on August 27, 2006. The plane ran out of runway before it was ready to rotate for takeoff. Of the 50 passengers and crew on board, the only survivor was co-pilot James Polhinki. Lawyers for Polhinki and his fellow crew members blamed Jeppesen in part for the accident, saying the chart in the cockpit that morning did not show a taxiway barrier that directed planes along an alternate route to the main runway. The chart was overdue for an update from Jeppesen, but that point was rendered moot when Judge Carl Forrester determined that at the time the update was scheduled, the barrier would not have been in place anyway. Also factoring into the decision was Polhinki's testimony that he couldn't recall the Jeppesen charts being used by either pilot that morning, and that as a rule, he only referred to the charts when he thought he needed help navigating an airport. Forrester also pointed out that the FAA had issued the appropriate notices to airmen warning of the changes. The summary judgment by Forrester effectively ends Jeppesen's involvement in the case, brought on behalf of Polhinki and his deceased crewmates. The case now goes to court, and that's scheduled for August 4th. Robert Clifford, a lawyer representing some of the victims' families, said the decision was no surprise. Quote, "Our focus and beliefs remain that this tragedy occurred when two pilots operated a plane on the wrong runway and should have known better, on their own, without any involvement from any outside source." Unquote. Alaska Airlines announced on Monday it recently began using mobile ground-based air units for cabin venting, cooling, and heat on parked aircraft at nearly all its gates at Seattle-Tacoma International Airport. The airline also announced it has retrofitted all its 737s capable of using blended winglets. Those two projects are the latest in a series of ongoing initiatives by the carrier to conserve fuel and reduce carbon emissions. Since 2002, the carrier says these efforts have reduced the amount of fuel Alaska Airlines uses to transport one passenger 1 mile by 17% and reduced carbon emissions as much as taking 130,000 cars off the road for 1 year. The ground-based units burn about a tenth as much fuel as the auxiliary power units on the aircraft, meaning the new units will significantly reduce both costs and carbon. The company says annual savings will more than double to 2.4 million gallons of fuel and $5.5 million once the units are in place at Alaska Airlines' other hubs in Anchorage, LAX, Portland, and San Francisco later this year. Frontier Airlines announced this week it has promoted Ted Christie III to Senior VP and Chief Financial Officer. He served previously as Senior VP of Finance for the airline. Christie came to Frontier in December 2002 from a vice president of finance position at a finance institution in Denver. He also had served as a revenue economist for the taxing authority in Arizona. Sean Menke, Frontier president and CEO, commented, quote, "We are truly fortunate to have someone like Ted working for us at a time like this, and I know he'll do everything in his power to make this company a success going forward," unquote. A time like this refers to Frontier's April 11th filing for Chapter 11 bankruptcy. Last week, the airline announced a 17% cutback in capacity and commensurate cuts in jobs. Ted's resume is going to look great in a year or two if he pulls this one together. And finally, Double Take Marketing tells ANN its new Adspressive graphic allows advertisers to reach a highly sought-after demographic while adding incremental non-airline revenue to airports. The company places large banner ads on the moving portion of the baggage carousel, giving passengers something to watch as they anxiously wait for their bags. The system will be installed on some carousels at Dallas-Fort Worth International Airport in August. Double Take Marketing Executive VP Tracy Zwollen points out, quote, "Baggage carousel advertising is the only medium where travelers wait 15-plus minutes for their luggage to arrive. Friends and family meeting the traveler wait as well and also see the moving ads," unquote. Double Take Marketing says it's applied for a U.S. patent on the material it uses. The company says it took over 2 years of research and development to create a material durable enough to withstand the wear and tear of baggage carousel operation. Well, duh, if it was easy, the luggage companies would have done it by now. The company adds that according to a 2004 Arbitron study, airline travelers are 80% more likely than average to have an annual household income in excess of $100,000 per year and are highly educated and discerning shoppers. And, after all, what could be better than having your product, service, or even your face associated with a 15-plus minute wait for luggage at the end of a long red-eye? Especially if your bags show up smashed or not at all. Wait, I have the perfect client for these ads. If you're seeing this ad instead of your bag, call the law firm of Make 'em Pay and How. We'll make sure the airlines hear you loud and clear. That's the latest from Aero News. Remember to check out the ANN special feature. Today, we'll hear the conclusion of Jim Campbell's conversation with retiring AOPA President Phil Boyer. And if you haven't done it yet, subscribe to our AeroCasts. Find them on iTunes, Yahoo, Odeo, and at our website, www.aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.